We are joined right now by the head football coach at Maryland. He is in his third season as Terrapins head coach, a 2018 Broyles Award winner. Maryland is 3-0. They're in first in the Big Ten East. They're at home against Kent State on Saturday. Their head coach is Mike Locksley. Mike, it is so good to have you on. How are you?
Doing great, and thanks for having me.
It's good to have you. Lots to talk about, too. So you're coming off that win over Illinois. Let me start right there. That was at their place on Friday night. I'm curious kind of what was going through you when Joseph Petrino lined up for a 32-yard field goal that would win you that game?
Well, having a lot of confidence in Joe, and I know he had pushed one earlier in the game. You know, my big thing was he makes that kick in practice 90% of the time, so felt really comfortable, which is why we, you know, didn't necessarily take a couple shots in the end zone and risk it, because we felt like we were in the spot where Joe, we had a lot of confidence in him being able to go make the kick.
You know, on top of that, Mike, you had a great speech in the locker room after the game, making the point that while it was not a perfect game, your guys did show you something in the way they faced that adversity. They showed some grit. In fact, specifically, what did they show you in falling behind on the road in the fourth quarter and then finding a way to dig deep and come back and win that game?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because earlier in the week we had talked about a game in 2019. We had started out 2-0 and a fast start, and we went and played a tough Temple team, which was very similar to what we faced out of Illinois. And knowing Brett and the type of coach he is, that his team, we knew it would be a tough game going on the road for a conference win. And for me, I think the biggest part is that 2 years ago when we faced that type of adversity, and I look back to the play where we stripped the ball out and it bounces right into the hand of the receiver who runs in for a touchdown, our sideline would have been devastated. And instead, I thought I saw a different sideline after they made that score. I saw a couple guys from both sides of the ball go to each other and say, hey, don't worry about it. We'll make the play. We're good. We're good. And to me, that meant that these guys are listening. And so we didn't play a perfect game, but we still found a way to win. And to me, that's a start of where I want this culture of this team to be.
Right. So interesting the way you answer that, because it leads me to my next point in question. Mike Locksley is joining us. Like, one of the things you've talked about is focusing on making sure that guys come together as a team. Like you just pointed out, that they're not only focused on the scoreboard, but they're focused on the next play. Focusing on the next play, or focusing on the next play in a game or in life, is such a hard thing to do because it's so easy, right, to get caught up in everything else that's swirling on around you. How do you go about teaching that and developing that mindset?
Man, it's just like raising kids. When you draw the line in the sand that, hey, here's our standard, and our standard is, you know, having been a coach and been a play caller, and I can tell you, during my career, I spent a lot of times looking at scoreboards, and they create anxiety. You know, the scoreboard really is a liar to you until the end of the game, because it really doesn't matter. And so, you know, to be down, whether it's 17-10 with 5 minutes left, as a play caller, as a player, you start to really press because you're like, man, we're down, we're behind. Well, if you don't focus on the scoreboard and just focus on the next play, and, you know, we've had a lot of great comebacks here. You know, Frank Reich was the starting quarterback and the greatest comeback in college football when they played Miami. And it all starts with just playing that next play. And then you worry about the scoreboard at the end. And, you know, we've really tried to beat that in our players' minds, that it doesn't matter what the score is until the end of the game. And let's just keep that part. Let's stay process-oriented and not outcome-oriented.
Right. I love that part. And I love this notion of the standard being the standard. I also love the notion of the standard over feelings, or mind over feelings. I know you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
In fact, when we talk mindset, Mike, I want to ask you about Trevor Moad, because I know you worked with him. And yeah, I mean, it's just so gutting. Did you know that he was ill? He passed away last week, and I spoke with him a number of times over the years. I had a great affinity and respect and fondness for him, and I didn't even know that he was ill. Did you? And what kind of an impact did he have on you?
Yeah, it's crazy, because I spoke with Trevor. I mean, I usually speak with him weekly. And, you know, a week ago or 2 weeks ago, he helps me with a lot of some of the messaging things we did. And in his honor, I actually used one of the messaging points he used about the man doesn't fall on the top of the mountain. He has to climb it. And, you know, Trevor has just been so impactful over the last 3 years that I've tried to build and develop the mental toughness of this team, because we're a program that has never kind of played to our potential since I've been back here. And, you know, Trevor's been really a consistent piece with me in terms of just messaging and developing that type of mindset. And, you know, when you hear, you know, it's, again, him being unselfish, he never once mentioned him being sick. I know he moved to the mountains and, you know, during COVID, and we've talked, like I said, plenty of times, but not once did he mention it. And that's just Trevor. I mean, I looked at a text message he sent me 2 weeks ago, and he asked me for some Terp gear and for me to send a pic of my family to him. So, you know, he's so impactful. I know he was very impactful at Alabama, where I first started having a chance to work with him under Coach Saban. I know he helped over at Georgia, and he works with Texas A&M and a bunch of different people. So he will be missed.
I really appreciate your thoughts on that. You know, I thought the same thing, Mike. Like if you, one thing for me not to know, because I would message with him also a little bit, but obviously you were closer to him than I was, and even you didn't know, but that point that you made about the mountains, I started to think about that because I would watch Trevor on Instagram, and he would post pictures from Lake Arrowhead, and I would say, dude, I mean, what a beautiful, beautiful spot, because that's not too far from where we are. And now I look at that, and I wonder, right? Like, I wonder if he wanted to go there and spend his time there. But to your point, even you didn't know. So one more thing I want to ask you about him. Like, in terms of messaging and imaging, you mentioned that he inspired you to coin the phrase, the best is ahead, as part of your vision for the program. So how would you describe that vision?
Well, you know, he says it all the time. And one of the things he would end our conversation, because, you know, in 2019, as I get the job here after leaving Alabama, where you go to three straight national championship games, and then you come to Maryland, which everybody knows I have an affinity for. As I talk about building Maryland, you know, it starts in recruiting. It starts with moving into a new facility that we just dedicated. And, you know, he would always say, you know, Locks, the best is ahead. Let's focus on what it looks like or what you want it to look like. And you kind of, that is an affirmation statement when you say the best is ahead, because it's a statement. It's not a question behind it. So, you know, from that point on in 2019, I would always, in a lot of my social media, when I talked to our team, whenever I had speaking engagements, because of him using that term with me all the time, the best is ahead, that's kind of become a mainstay here at Maryland, you know, for a program that's building and trying to get to a place where we can have an impact in college football. And I really think it really fits this place, because I do think our best is still ahead of us. But like I said, a lot of it's due to the fact of what Trevor has imparted on me through the years.
I'm glad you and I could talk about him. Mike Locksley is joining us. You just mentioned, Mike, that a lot of people know you have an affinity for the program. For those who do not know, you've got actually deep roots and deep ties to the area. You played your college ball at Towson. You worked in the area and coached at Maryland in the late 90s. You came back in 2012. You spent time as the interim head coach in 2015. Now you're the full-time head coach. Given all of that, what does it mean to you to be the head coach at Maryland?
Yeah, I mean, anytime you can be the head coach at a place that you grew up a fan of. I mean, I grew up in the shadows of Coldfield House, where, you know, the late Len Bias and all those great Terp basketball teams. And then in the mid-80s, you know, Maryland football was one of the better programs up and down the East Coast, where they won three straight ACC championships under Coach Ross, Bobby Ross. And, you know, growing up in this area, we didn't have I grew up in D.C., so we didn't have a university for the District of Columbia. So I naturally was a Maryland fan and spent a lot of times coming up here in my childhood and teenage years rooting for the Terps, and to be able to be a part of it for 14 years, three different stints like you talked about. It's a place that's been great to me and my family. There's a very fruitful area for recruiting. It's just great to be able to coach the hometown team, man. It means more to you when you kind of are as invested as I am.
Thing is, Mike, you're invested in a number of things that are above and beyond the game itself. As an example, you've been an advocate for hiring and supporting women within the football program. Why is that something that is so important for you and for the program?
Well, I just think this area kind of bleeds it. You know, this area is the richest minority area in the country, and growing up here, I've seen minorities really strive and thrive because of what this area brings. And for me, I've kind of been that guy that loves the underdog. I was an underdog, still am. You know, not a lot of people really thought that I could have success here, or the success that we're going to be able to have here. And I just like, you know, paying things forward, because I know I didn't get here by accident. and I didn't get here on my own, that a lot of people helped me get here. So I look at it, to me, with the coalition I started for minority coaches and, you know, with women in the sport of football, I look at it as me paying things forward for the opportunities I've been granted.
Mike Locksley is the head coach of Maryland. Mike, there are so many things that we could still talk about. I do want to ask you about this before you go. You're also leading the way when it comes to mental health awareness. When you face Iowa on October 1st, it will be a mental health awareness game. I know that's something that is very close to your heart. Why is that an area where you want to put your time and your resources?
Yeah, you know, my son Miko Locksley was murdered in 2017 when I was the offensive coordinator at Alabama. And he dealt with mental health issues from the age of 21 until he died. And as a family, it was nothing that we were very familiar with. And my wife, Kia, and I dived right into trying to understand it. And, you know, typically when someone is injured, you break an arm, you can put a cast on it, people understand that you're hurt. Well, the brain is one of the areas, you know, when the brain is hurt and the mental health issues take on a life of themselves, there's not a lot of people to have sympathy or even empathy to understand it. And so, you know, dealing with 18 to 22 year olds, I learned that the age of 21 is where a lot of these breakthroughs happen with mental health issues. And so, you know, the group of kids that I deal with, I see it. I know what it looks like now, and I haven't had a son that dealt with it. So, again, paying things forward, my wife and I just feel it's a really important endeavor for us to bring light that, you know, just like tearing an ACL, mental health issues are real, and that they deserve to be helped any way you can. And so we've created a lot of initiatives within our program and within our community that we can use to try to help combat the stigma against mental health issues.
Exactly. The stigma against mental health. Mike, one last thought, because, and I'm so glad that you mentioned that, because I tend to forget myself, right? I've got a son who's 20. I have a son, or we have a son who's 20 and a son who's 16. And I find myself getting a little bit short sometimes, and maybe not as empathetic. And some of the times, frankly, I think that they deserve it. But at the same time, I think that you can speak to this when you deal, and mental health is something that affects everybody. But what about people this age, teenagers? You know, they're dealing with challenges in their life that are really hard for somebody at that age to bear, and they might have to go through it alone. Like, what have you learned from your players in doing this work?
Well, I learned that the more you're open about it's okay to take off the helmet and take off the mask, as my friend Rachel Barbeau talks about, when you can encourage them to communicate, because, you know, these guys, they have so much information and so much things thrown at them that we didn't have growing up. And now to have a outlet where they can communicate those things and make it a comfortable environment where it's not, you know, a football player is not cool to say, hey, I'm going through depression, or I've got some stuff going on. So we try to really extract the baggage that they come in with by making it really easy and cool to talk about, hey, these things are going on in my life and I need a little help.
I wonder about that, right? It seems like counterintuitive, because the culture for so long was, hey, man, fight, battle, never show weakness, never let them know, never show them. But at the same time, you still want to cultivate that kind of toughness and mental toughness and physical toughness and emotional toughness, but you want to cultivate empathy as well, too. So how do you go about doing both those things?
Well, it goes back to, I equate everything to being a parent, man. You got to hug them when they're doing, you know, great, and get on them when they're doing, you know, bad, but still find a way to have that relationship with them where they feel comfortable enough to tell you that, hey, things are going on. And, you know, to me, that's my role as the head coach. Our roles as coaches is not just about what happens on the football field, but helping them be the best version of themselves, to be great husbands, great fathers, great spouses, you know, as they mature in our program.
You bet. One last thought. What about something on the football field? You're getting ready for Kent State on Saturday. What is your message to the team this week as they get ready for that game?
You know, it's just win Monday through Friday. That's the goal. That's the standard. Meaning we got to go out and have great practices Monday through Friday. Really, the opponent on Saturday doesn't matter. It's about what we do, and let's do it as best as we possibly can with the right kind of mindset.
He's the head football coach at Maryland. He's in his third season right there. And once again, Maryland 3-0 and in first in the Big Ten East. Mike, I appreciate you and I appreciate the conversation. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jim.
Great talking to you, Mike. Well done. Mike Locksley is the head football coach at Maryland. Man, so much good stuff in that.